This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug-bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
How's it going, everybody? All right. Everybody here has been to State Theater?
Today?
Yep,
just today.
I saw the Cowboy Junkies here many years ago. And I feel that my... You saw Weird Al here? Really? I feel that my... It wound up being like... That was the first time I was at State Theater, and it turned out that me and my wife think that she was there too, but she'd have been way too young for me to be gawking at the time. But I feel that she was
not
there.
Not to say you weren't.
Not to say I wasn't, but I shouldn't have been. We think so. And then later I came, you and me came here to see Bob Dylan.
I was right up there.
And that night, I don't know if you remember, I have a picture. We're sitting there, and I was arguing that Jell-O shots don't actually make you drunk, because I had this theory that something happened to the alcohol. Do you remember this? And
this
I spent the whole
chemistry.
Show taking a little time out in the footwell, below the seats up there somewhere, up top. And you know, like at a concert, everybody just gets out of their seats and comes down to, you know, dance around.
Yeah.
Well, when I get done with my nap, I come down looking for everyone and catch my buddy Eric doing like a little bit like that. You know when you kind of like dance behind someone a little bit? But it was like, yeah, and I come down, I'm like, really? Because he's kind of a little...
Drunk?
No, but like he's like a little bit doing like the, I'm right behind you dancing too.
Behind
thing
you.
With my girlfriend.
Look creepy.
At State Theater.
Jello
yeah, not
shots.
To me.
Jello shots.
Not to me. Got a couple. Let's do introductions, and I got a couple people we got to say hi to. We have the Latvian Eagle way down the end.
Good evening. Thank you.
Mark Kenyon from Wired the Hunt. A huge round of applause for our very good friend from growing up, Matt Droz. Keeps a low profile.
Keep it low.
Ron Baim, who was kind enough to give me employment for several years and then friendship for many more after. And then my big brother, Matt Ranella. Where out here is Ada? There's an 11-year-old, Ada. Okay, listen. Your dad
listen.
Needs you to understand that listening to the Meat Eater Podcast is better and more important for your mind and spirit than listening to Bruno Mars. Hello to Officer Darren McIntosh, you out there? Thank you. Now, also, my mother's here tonight. So, Rosemary Ranella. We're gonna play a game later. We're gonna play a game called Seeing Through the Bullshit. And so, someone has to come up and be the contestant. And we took a blank map of the theater with all the seats on it and gave it to my mother, Rosemary, to select a seat who will be the person that gets to come play the game and win something. And my mother made a big deal out of selecting someone from the balcony because she likes to root for the underdogs. So, a lucky player up there will be called down. to do that. And then one more thing. We'll get to you guys later, too, but birthdays. We've got birthdays here tonight. Man, a lot. Really, tonight? That means tonight? Is it your birthday? Oh, then you won't win. Like, birthdays today. Oh, okay. The oldest, if you're old, you're in luck. We'll get to that later. If it's your birthday and you're old, you're in luck. Cover that. Now, a couple, got to hit on a couple news items like we like to do. They just had, you guys heard of this? There was like a organized squirrel hunt in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. That got badly protested by the League of Humane. Let me get this right. It's the League of Humane Voters organized a protest against the squirrel hunt. The organizer was saying, it's very disconcerting, the idea of it being a family-friendly event. Look at the strong correlation of kids who commit violence against animals as children and then grow up to be violent against people. A listener wrote in and he was saying, what's weird is part of the plan of this squirrel hunt was to teach people how to acquire and prepare wild game. If the organizer's assertion is true, would it not stand to reason that children who are raised eating meat from a grocery store are more likely to hire hitmen to commit violent acts against people on their behalf?
Yeah.
Also got an interesting note from a dude, a good Midwestern boy, who bought a new bow. And the guys at the bow shop were saying, man, if you want to get dialed for hunting, you need to shoot the bow like how you would shoot hunting. And he's planning on hunting in a tree stand, but his yard has no tree stands, so he takes the hunting from the phone pole to practicing from the phone pole out on the street. And by the time the police come and the municipality guy comes and makes him take his stand down, but they did give him a line on where to go buy his own phone pole that he can bury into his yard. We were talking about Norway recently, where a guy rode in with a ethical dilemma from Norway, and another guy wrote in with a Norway expression. What was the hunting one?
The German one?
Yeah, Vitmen.
Vitmenschau.
And it means?
Like good luck hunting, like best of luck hunting.
Yeah, he got to talking about that. And in Norway, they say skitjacked, which means I hope you have shit hunting. And it's like the same as saying, like break a leg. Like you give, you know what I mean? Yeah. You don't want to jinx his outing, so you hit him like that.
Can you say it again? I want to make sure you remember that.
It's, well, S-K-I-T-T, which I'm going to go with skit.
Skit.
J-A-K-T, which I'm going to go with.
That's something to do with hunting. J-A-K, that's a yacht.
Skit jacked.
Just yacht.
I hope you have a shitty hunt trip.
I think you guys should all use the Latvian version of that instead, because we have pretty much the same thing, two different versions of it. We say either "shari gadam," which means basically shoot past them or over them. So you're saying like, "Good luck, hope you miss," kind of a thing. The other thing we say is "lai tu spalvo nedizato," which means I hope that you don't see hide nor hair.
Really, these are both Latvian ones.
Yep.
Can you welcome everybody tonight in Latvian?
Labvakar damas un kungi.
There it is. Another one last news item, and I know Matt Drost, you sent this to me.
Yeah.
Recently, like, you grow up these parts, taking for granted that you can just go down and walk down the beach.
We did, often.
Just take a walk down the damn beach, because this is America. And the Supreme Court just confirmed that, yes, in fact, this is America.
Yeah.
By
at least the Great Lakes. Down? Great Lakes.
What's
yeah.
that?
The Great Lakes. Yeah.
The Great Lakes are America.
Yeah. Yeah. So in Indiana and Michigan, the Supreme Court actually refused to hear the hearing contesting the ability to walk the high water mark.
Yeah, dude, a couple. I'll just throw out the two people, Donald and Bobby Gunderson. What they suffer from is they suffer from a problem that happens in American society with some people where I like to think of it as too bad it isn't true that isms. Like, you buy a house on the beach, and the next day here's some
dirt bag walking down the beach.
Surf casting.
Yeah, and you're like, too bad it isn't illegal that that guy wasn't down there on my beach.
Yeah.
And then they just have the energy and time to try to
follow their dream.
Yeah, like, my dream would be that the people who are enjoying that area, just down there, you know, taking in the sun, my dream is they couldn't enjoy that area. And I'm going to spend a lot of money preventing them from enjoying it. But so the Supreme Court not hearing it, they like challenged it, got shot down.
Yep. And they took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court refused to hear it and said that the law stands as is.
Yeah.
The high water mark is public domain.
So summer is still on, everyone. summer is still scheduled. This is kind of newsy, but we'll hit it right now while we're talking about news. A little bit of news. Mark, you're going to do a recap. Mark Canyon, Wired to Hunt. This is the Wired to Hunt Michigan deer season recap.
Jeez. Yeah.
What happened, Mark?
Well, I think the big thing we were talking about discussing was a little bit, not Frank, demographics a little bit, what kind of success rate hunters saw, what kind of participation we saw. And I will preface this by saying that the data available is split between 2 years because there's not harvest data available yet for the 2018 season, but there is license sales data available from this season. Okay. So first off, an interesting thing of note is that this year, 2018, there were about just over 600,000 deer hunters in the state of Michigan. That is a lot of deer hunters, one of the highest numbers of deer hunters in the country, but it's down nearly 100,000 in just the last 5 years.
Really?
Very significant drop, 15% drop off, and that is down 200,000 deer hunters from a high point of 785,000 in 1998. So we're seeing that pretty precipitous drop.
Wow.
That's the downer. Good news front. I don't know, maybe not a good news front. Depends on how you look at it. But we had the second highest number of bucks killed per state in the entire country. So the only state that killed more bucks.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Tejas?
Tejas it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you're talking about food and you're like, oh, you know, they eat it in Japan. Anything to do with deer, you're like, let me guess.
Yeah.
It's Texas.
Or any funky things, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Michigan killed second only to Texas.
Second only to Texas, yeah. And that is the third highest. No, let me take that back. The first or second highest bucks per square mile in the entire nation. Three times the national average. So we're
like
killing a lot
days.
Of. We're killing a lot of deer. Killing
how many
bucks.
People in here got a deer this year?
Man, crowd of stone cold killers out there.
I think
how many people brought jerky.
I can say with a lot of confidence that we have above average deer hunters in this room because exactly 50% of the deer hunters in this state killed a deer this past year, 2017.
50% success rate.
50% success rate. Wow. If you bump that up to how many people killed more than one deer, what's your guess?
What percentage of licensed hunters killed more than one deer?
Yes.
And 50% killed a deer?
Yes.
I'm going to go, what do you think?
20%.
20?
Well, 35.
30.
25.
15.
Oh, really?
Big drop off from one to two or more. I killed two deer this year in Michigan.
12 killed two.
You're like an elite.
Top 15%.
You're an elite cold-blooded killer.
Out of six people, yeah.
But that, yeah.
Any other good Michigan insights people all know about?
Yeah, yeah. Bow hunting.
You did a good job. You got all this memorized?
Yeah.
Nice.
No paper.
I'm impressed.
Nothing written on my hand.
You see your palms. Okay.
Hand check. Bow hunting in Michigan, very, very popular. I think a lot of deer hunters like to talk about how there's so much bow hunting pressure in this state. I sometimes use that as an excuse for why it's tough in this state. Well, it's backed up by fact. We had 311,000 bow hunters in Michigan.
Really? Is it because of crossbows?
I do not know the answer to that. I don't know what the breakdown is between crossbow and bow, but a lot of passionate bow hunters in this state. And we have the third highest number of bucks kill per square mile in the country with archer equipment, I think, if I remember that correctly.
Is the number of bow hunters, is that number going up or down?
I haven't seen a trend on that. I would guess it probably parallels the overall.
What are they attributing? I know it's a host of things, and I kind of already know that it's unanswerable, but what are your insights? What are they attributing to the number decline? Have you seen the number of, like, the total number of people like that compared to hours spent afield? Are we losing a lot of like the lame-o weekend, one weekend a year dudes? Are we losing like the hardcores? Like, who are we losing?
So I haven't seen data as far as that. I can make some assumptions. Because
I don't mean to say lame-o, but you know what I mean.
Like, yeah. You know,
that's a horrible word choice. That's one of those things you say in life. A warrior of the weekend.
A guy who likes...
What's happening basically is that, and this is kind of the thing you're seeing across the entire nation, is that there was this very large group of baby boomers that came in and for a number of different reasons took on hunting, very popular within that demographic. And that group has just been aging. So if you look at the curve of hunting participation by age, you know, 20 years ago, you saw like 30 or 40 year olds or whatever that bracket was. That was our highest chunk of hunters. And then as you look for 10 years, that bracket just moves further down. And now we see our highest participation of hunters are in that like 54 to 70 range, 54 to high 60s. And so what's happening is that your number of hunters every year, retained hunters, is dropping off. Because I can't remember the age at 70 or 72 or somewhere around there. There's a very hard line where participation usually starts to dramatically drop off. People aging out.
Dying
so we've got a very large segment of the hunting community that's aging out, and that's not being filled back in at the top of the funnel with younger hunters. Another interesting Michigan thing is that I saw data from 2013 through 15 that showed the number of new hunters coming in. And if some might remember that back in like 11, 12, 13, somewhere around there, we were encouraged because there were some new numbers that showed across the nation hunting participation was up a little bit. So that was kind of a reason to celebrate. Well, this data showed in Michigan that the number of new hunters is still actually going down. So our R3, you know, attempts, recruitment, retention, et cetera, maybe we're, at least from 2013 to 15, was moving in the wrong direction, which was not
from the deer's perspective.
No, true.
The deer, like, we're seeing some positive trends.
Yeah.
So, the hunting's going to get, Michigan hunting's going to get better and better.
It depends on how you're looking at it. I guess if you want less
competition. If you want to see less pumpkins in the woods.
Yeah. Which, I mean, like, selfishly, would I like it if there's fewer people? It'd be nice for my own personal hunting, but for the long run, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not what you want.
As long as it's like, it might feel immediately beneficial, but there's a long-term play that some people feel that long-term play becomes compromised.
Exactly.
Okay, if you had to hit Michigan in one word, and it can't be a hand gesture. Michigan in a single word. What would the word be?
Do I go first?
Anyone.
Or just me?
I can go first if you're not ready. Give you guys some time.
Yeah, okay. I call second.
All right. If someone else might take it.
Yeah, I want to make sure I don't listen.
I'm picking this word now because I've been gone now for 20 years, but I'm going to go with green.
Greedy?
Green.
That's what I was going to say.
Green.
You stole my answer.
Why?
You know green in what sense?
That's true, man.
What sense?
That's a good point.
Just like the color?
Yeah, because being in the West, man, you don't realize growing up here how green and how jungle-like this foliage is. When I come back now in the summer, driving down these boulevards, that, you know, giant overhanging oaks, you know, the big giant leaves, and it's just so green. And, you know, I feel it in my soul.
When I was spending a lot of time out in Matt's neck of the woods out in eastern Montana, I would come here and be struck by the foliage. But then... And it was cool, but then, like, I lost that buzz kind of living in the Pacific Northwest. But I think it'll come back now.
Yeah.
Like, to look from an airplane and just see that,
canopy.
Like, line of leaves, man. It's reassuring. But, God, it's bleak in the winter.
Not today.
You liked it today.
Oh, it was beautiful today.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were saying we're green, like a bunch of new hunters. I didn't really appreciate that.
I thought he meant
that.
Money. I thought he just pictures the land carpeted in cash.
and a bunch of marijuana growing in the woods.
That, what do you got, Mark?
That did just become legalized. Tradition.
Tradition.
Yeah, I think I look at Michigan and I see a state filled with a lot of passion for the tradition of hunting. And then also, so I'd say it's like the macro level tradition, but then also personally, you know, when I think of Michigan hunting, it's the tradition of my family deer camp and spending time with family and those moments.
Yeah. Everyone up here, except Ronnie, was born in the great state of Michigan.
Mm-hmm. No, that's not true. I was born in Hinsdale.
You were?
Yeah.
How old were you when you moved to Michigan?
2 months.
Oh, 2 months old.
Where were you born?
I was thinking about that. Yeah, that's right, man.
I couldn't really.
About
that.
So never mind.
Where was Matt born? Where?
Hinsdale, Illinois. It's a suburb, okay. Suburb of Chicago.
I was
Chicago.
Born in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Oh, never mind. I thought 50%. I was stacking the deck. I thought it was like a bunch of Michigan mugs, man. But everybody's up here is a faker. So.
Transplants.
How do they say it? Formative years? Is that how you say it?
Formative? Yeah, formative.
Yeah.
Formative.
We've all spent formative years here.
Yes. I got more Michigan laid up right here than you boys. Matt, what do you got? One word.
Man, like, so I thought about this when you asked this question earlier, and like, I kind of don't want to say what I was thinking, but I want to say adorable.
Adorable?
But I have to describe what I mean when I say that. Like, because
you got to be like a special dude to use the word adorable.
Right, exactly. So I want to say adorable, and I was like, hunters be like, what's he talking about adorable? Like, I want to kick his ass. Like, no, like, yeah. I mean, like, it's
adorable.
Yeah, it's like, it kind of plays off that tradition. It's like this, like, it's like, you know, it's complex. It's got all these things. It's got all the seasons, like the big city, the small city, the urban. It's got all of that. So it's kind of this like Norman Rockwell adorable sort of like sense to it. But yet, like, it's also kind of a qualifier for like bigger state stuff.
You know?
Like, it's a qualifier like for moving to Montana. It's a qualifier for Alaska. It's got, you know, you can fish salmon here. You know, you can't fish that in many states other than the, like, you know, coastal states. There's big game here. Like, so it's got a little bit of everything. So that was kind of adorable.
Oh, adorable.
Makes me want to snuggle my state, man.
Makes me want to panic because I can't come up with a word. The only thing I could think of is from moving from Illinois to here is Yanni actually stole mine. I was going to go green.
You were going to roll with green.
Yeah, I was thinking green because that's what I thought of when I came here. You know, Illinois is a prairie state. We got trees, but they're in a city. And I guess the only thing I can think of that struck me from coming here as a kid is just water. Like all the different kinds. You got waterfalls, great lakes, little lakes, swampy lakes, duck ponds, everything. Just water.
Frozen water.
Frozen. Lots of hard water. Hard water. Yeah. That's all I can come up with.
Mine was adjective form of water. Watery.
Watery. Nice going, Illinois, brother.
I don't feel so bad about really, adorable now.
Right? Adorable
is way better than the watery. The reason I even asked that question is I was talking to the writer Ian Fraser one time, and he's from Ohio, but really liked to talk about me being from Michigan. And he said one day we were talking about Michigan, and he said, you know, when I think of Michigan, I always think of people that I met on the bus who would say, fuckers. Adorable. I remember being like, that's true, man.
I thought that was universal. Yeah. I thought that was being on a bus.
It was an elementary school bus.
I was like, that's true. That is how we say that on the bus.
I just said it. So that sticks in my head. I can't get it out of my head. Okay, now another Michigan thing real quick. You could pick, and I got to warn you about this, you can pick your favorite Uncle Ted or Uncle Bob song.
But you don't get one of each?
You can do one of each, but I think it'd be too long because that'd be like 12 tunes.
Okay.
I think you should go one. It could be either Uncle Bobby or Uncle Teddy. I tried to talk Matt into bringing his guitar to play a little bit of every's favorite song. And the Seeger ones, you'd be all over.
Some of them.
But he was intimidated
he was intimidated by certain other tunes that you were like are too complex.
Yeah.
So he did not bring the guitar.
I can't shred can like you, can I you, can't shred like the Nudes.
Can you do like a like if someone says a song, you'd be able to like
hum it?
Yeah, something like that.
That's impressive.
Sure he can.
Yeah. Fair. So because these are like things I think like foundational Michigan music. And right. I know there's newer versions, but I'm just dating myself here. But this was old music when I was a kid. Yeah. Uncle Bobby and Uncle
Speak
Ted.
For yourself.
Mark, you raising your hand?
Yeah, I call a Nugent song because I don't think I could name a Seeger song.
Dude, come on. Mark, this guy.
Ooh.
Mark Kenyon is the only man I've ever met in my life who identifies. Can I do it to you?
Which,
please,
I don't
do
know.
It.
What are you about to do?
You like. It's almost like the name that shall not be spoken.
I don't know what you're talking about. Musicians?
Yeah.
In Mexico, we had a long conversation.
Yeah, he's great.
Mark, like, actually, if you ask Mark, like, Mark likes, it's like, remember like the Fonzie trying to say wrong?
Okay. Let's first preface.
He'd be like, hey, I'm sorry. Mark's a Billy Joel fan.
He's not like my favorite, but Billy Joel's pretty good.
He also didn't see Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah.
Okay, did you finally?
I'm less shocked that he can't name a Nugent song.
No, he can't name an Uncle Bobby song.
I got Nugent.
Oh, I thought
Night
he said
moves?
Oh,
Night Moves.
No, no.
Roll Me Away.
My favorite Nugent
Strut?
Song.
Turn
my favorite Nugent song is the clichéest song you could possibly think of for this event, but it was on a CD that I listened to every morning when heading to go hunting. It's on my deer hunting soundtrack. First track. Got me pumped up every morning heading out. It's the iconic Fred Bear.
Yeah.
Ow!
That counts. Yanni, you gonna roll with Uncle?
I think I can only name one of each. Like, I'm just not good at this game. I've never been good at this game. But yeah, it would be Night Moves.
Night Moves.
Yeah. And I like it more now since you explained. I used to just sing along and never really thought about words of songs.
Points sitting away high.
Sing along and dance a little bit and enjoy myself, feel good. But when you explained what that song means, it like it changed it, you know?
Like what actually is happening in that song.
You needed an interpreter.
Yeah, that one, yeah. I would like that. Yeah. Can you explain maybe just one verse? I think everybody would love to hear it.
Yeah, it's about senescence. It's like growing old and fading out. Woke last night to the sound of thunder. It like... It strikes a man deep when you start listening to it. Real heavy.
Yeah.
How far off, I sat and wondered. You could read it like a Bob Service poem.
Started humming a song from 1962.
Matt, you got one you want to rip out?
Like, I feel like I should go with Roll Me Away because, like, motorcycles. But I have to go with the live version of Travel Man and the Beautiful Loser.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when it kicks in the Beautiful Loser in the middle of that, that's pretty good, man. And then I do have a Ted. I do have a Ted song, Great White Buffalo.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
That is, yes. That's a good one.
Yes.
The B-side to
Fred Bear.
Yeah, the B-side.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got Ron. You're not like a big music guy.
But that was like, oh yeah, the live version was the.
I'm not. I never have. But I have continually bought Bob Seger CDs of the greatest hits of Bob Seger for the last 20 years. And when they burn up, I throw them out. So my daughter...
You burn up a CD?
You can if you listen to it enough.
He plays it that fast.
Well, I'm on the road a lot. And I have instructions to my daughter, Jessie. At my funeral, it will be accompaniment. You will accompany me.
That's a good one.
I will cry if I start doing the lyrics to that.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Sunday lady, you'll accompany me. It makes me weep.
I'll stick with the Seeger theme, but mine would probably be Refugee.
That's Uncle Tom.
Which is not.
He's not from here. Not Uncle Tom's cabin.
But you got to admit, that's a pretty good song.
Yeah.
I heard it yesterday. But really, I'd say I can't pick just one. I have to go with two. One is as sweet as the other is savage. I'd say on the sweet end, it's Main Street. And then on the savage end, it's Her Strut.
Strut.
Both those songs...
Do they get you to dance?
Are about... You know, they're the only two songs I know of in this whole catalog that are about how you say adult dancing.
Yes. But you, this is a debate. I don't know if you remember this. We used to have, we had a like big debate about what Strut is about.
Right, right.
In Strut, right. Uncle Bobby says, I do respect her. I do respect her, but I love to watch her strut, is what he says. Matt used to say, no, no, no. He's saying, I do respect her butt.
I love to see her.
I love to watch her strut. And we would argue about that endlessly. And I hope that now you've given up on your perspective.
It does seem a little silly in retrospect. The problem with all that stuff is like, oh, it's just like, you come back here, you hear so much classic rock. In Montana, you don't hear nearly as much.
No, it's hard to keep up on it.
But, oh, that stuff is so good, but it just gets so old, you know?
You mean after a lifetime of listening to it?
I wish I had, like, rock and roll dementia.
Yeah.
Where I could just
always be new.
All be gone and I could discover it anew, you know?
Yeah, that'd be good. Mine's been taken.
Like with friends that you haven't seen in 5 years, they'd get in your car and he'd be like, he had that album in 5 years ago when I got him this car.
Yeah.
You know?
Mine's already been taken, but definitely the older I get, like the Night Moves thing. Yeah, because now that I'm like practically dead,
halfway,
it's especially meaningful.
But I remember we had a conversation about Hollywood Nights when you're driving.
Yeah.
Like that's a good driving song.
Makes you want to drive.
Yeah, faster than you should.
Okay, so that's your Michigan tune. If you had to do, and Mark, Kenny, I'm barring you from doing what I think you're going to do. One Michigan hunting and fishing activity. You have to pick one thing, one hunting and fishing thing in Michigan, and that's the only one you can engage in. And don't worry about, like, factoring out how many days you can participate in it for a year, but, like, the thing that is best to you.
But you're barring me from saying
what I think you're going to say.
So I can't say deer hunting.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Right.
Does that put you in a really bad position?
No.
Okay.
No.
You can say it.
Easy answer, other than deer, would be turkey hunting.
Turkey hunting.
Send me. Get me after the gobblers.
Michigan Turks, Yanni.
Michigan Turks.
I probably had to go Turks too, man. Yeah, no. I love my squirrels, but if
kind
I'm going.
Surprising.
Really? Not surprising at all.
But you really love squirrels.
I really love squirrels, man. But those turkeys, man, like somebody asked us recently about like which animal is most challenging or what do you love about hunting so much? And I answered because I love the challenge. And I feel like I wasn't clear enough and people mistook that I was saying that I love just the physical challenge of it so much. But turkey hunting, really, a lot of times it's not that physical, right? Like, and that's one thing I love about it for looking at the future is when I'm an old man, I can probably still be hunting turkeys. But the turkey just consistently humbles me. And that's really nice to have in a species. Squirrels have been doing that to me lately as well. But I feel like there might come a time where I won't be humbled by the squirrel anymore.
No, I'm with you. But, like, turkeys, the thing, I love to hunt turkeys, and they do humble you. But sometimes I wonder if turkeys are hard because they get smart. Or is it because they're so unsmart that they become completely unpredictable? Right? Because if you really review it in your mind, there could be two things going on. One would be that he's cagey. Two is just he's completely irrational.
There's probably a little bit of both going on.
And you mistake his irrational character. Because you'd be like, well, why? Like, I'm making, like, these enticing sounds. You should want to come over here to make love to this hen turkey that I'm mimicking. But he's just so whacked out that it doesn't even occur to him to come do it. If I could solve that, then I maybe would go with it. But I have a different one that I'm going to go with.
But it doesn't matter because the chess game is only in my head. He's not really playing against me, right? He doesn't know.
Good point.
Did you? We talked about this before. Did you see the thing the guy did where I was saying if you set up on a, like if you set up on a roost tree, 100 yards away from the roost tree, what are the odds that the turkey's just gonna walk past you?
Yeah, you showed me his calculations. Yeah,
13% of the time, he'll walk within shotgun range of you, which is kind of about right. Like just randomly select a position in a circle around a roost tree, and there's a 13% chance that he'll pass within 40 yards of one side of you or the other. And I feel like that's about, I mean, I still love what you're saying, man. I'm not dogging on turkey hunting.
No offense taken.
Man, like, I want to say deer hunting too, but I think that, I feel like that's kind of like everybody's kind of go-to.
Deer hunting, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I did ban Matt from that.
Yeah, it was just me.
But I also like, honestly, like bouncing around in a boat, like bottom fishing, like wondering what you're gonna get out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like just like panfish, bass, like just an unknown lake, like not knowing what's gonna happen. Like I like that.
Drop bait down to the bottom
of the lake. Just like seeing what you're gonna get. Like, cause like if you're turkey hunting, you're like going to get a turkey, which is great. I love that. But I also like going out there with like kind of the unknown. Like, what am I gonna get today? Like, I like that idea.
Yeah, like you're asking little questions to the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I can't really, I'd be hunting grouse. I'd have to hunt grouse. That'd be the one thing that if I couldn't travel anymore, I could always count on Michigan for having a handful of grouse to chase.
So, what are grouse numbers in Michigan doing right now?
Well, I heard a guy say recently they do best in years that end in 9-0. So that would be this fall. And the following fall from here.
So it's good right now?
Should be coming up, yeah. We're hoping.
So there's no, like, long-term trouble? Because, like, Indiana, like, a state endangered bird now, right?
Yeah, Indiana is going to listed as endangered. It's not going to affect us any, but it's going to be listed endangered there. No, it's still dropping off precipitously in every state. Like, our grouse numbers will never take what we took years ago.
Just because changing timber practices?
I think mostly. I think, you know, habitats like everything. Habitat. It's like location to buy a house.
Yeah.
It's always habitat. But, you know, luckily we do a little bit of timbering, you know. Not enough, but we do a little bit of timbering. But, I mean, you can find grouse, even if it's not a clear cut. You can find grouse, and yeah, that's the one thing I couldn't live without. I'd have to have that.
Oh, I don't like this moving the sidebar of, like, taking it out of the season. Like, oh. I didn't say take it out of season,
like, poach it.
Oh, I had these guys over here shooting chicks in June or something.
Oh, no, what I meant was, you could, like, I'm trying to free you from feeling like you need to pick a thing just because you can do it for many days.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm gonna stay with, even though that's the case, I'm going to stay with perch.
Fishing yellow perch.
Yeah.
Perch fish.
Because, I guess two reasons.
You fished yellow perch today?
I did. Yeah. There's just so much opportunity. They're so good to eat, and I just like the how egalitarian it is, you know.
Anybody can sleep in a tent.
You don't need permission. There's so many, you know, it's like every man's fish.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm with you. So, yeah. When I was thinking about this, because I think about a lot, The thing I liked most was something we didn't do that many times. And I think that you, Matt Droz, you and our brother Danny pioneered it, which was where Pendles Creek flows out into Pendles Bay, which is kind of like Whitefish Bay, right?
Yeah.
Of Lake Superior. Yep. And you guys, this is in the mid-90s.
Yeah, it would have been 96, 97, yeah.
You guys figured out that you could go down there in the spring.
Yeah.
No, it's fall too, though.
We did both.
Taking spawn sacks with little bits of foam in them and hucking them out and catching little dinker steelhead.
Yeah. We said, it was amazing. Set up rods and just sit back and wait for them to go off.
Surf fishing Lake Superior.
That's pretty fun, man.
And one time we caught a beaver by the tail.
I grabbed that.
That was back when we would do something called worrying wildlife.
Yeah.
Where you would just now and then detain a beaver.
just for the story, which you would tell 20 years later on stage.
Send him along his way after worrying him. But, there's a picture I have. There's a picture I have from fishing Pendles Bay, like surf casting Pendles Bay. And we were down there, I think it was real windy, and I think we got done fishing, and everybody was drinking Boone's Farm wine. Yeah. And what stuck out, like what sticks out about the picture, what sticks out about that little brief kind of moment when we did that a lot, was I remember it was, and I've talked about this a handful of times with friends of mine, it was like, I guess I was hit the age where, you know, like when you're really young, you got friends, but you don't think about them. That's when you call everybody fuckers, you know, right? Yeah. And like, that's how you are with your friends.
You don't have to foster that friendship much. It's just there.
It's just, you just take it for granted.
It's just the guy you accuse of masturbating a lot.
Yes, it's like, you have a friend, you accuse him of masturbating, you give him the finger when you see him.
Yep.
And he's just your main friend, you know?
So I know it's a good friend.
Yeah, and you know that you're like, you know, like Doug Duren says, you're like, no, it's not a dog, right? So you're just together. But then, like, at that this Pendle's Bay day that I'm thinking of was one of the first moments when I whatever hit an age where I was like, my God, do I like my friends?
Yeah.
You know, and like a way, and I have this picture from that day, and look at the picture, it's like this realization that, you know, you do like these people. They're not just people to flip off or whatever when you see them. And it was like this kind of like cherished moment. Now I always have this thing and I look at it and it's always anchored in time because we would drink a lot of Boone's back then. And I remember we were fishing Pendle's Lake one time.
That's
so cold that our Boone's froze.
I was,
and it rose up as a syrup.
Yeah.
And then we would just do shots of the syrup that came up out of the top of your Boone's farm. Yeah.
So I took my daughter ice fishing the other day, actually she asked me to go ice fishing, which is great. But then I found out later she was doing it because she wanted to get out of a babysitting gig that I didn't know she was asked to do. And she was like, my dad is going to take me ice fishing. And then she asked me to go ice fishing. So that was like the whole shtick. But then we were on the ice and she was like, have you ever been out ice fishing for a whole day? And I was like thinking about one of those Pendle trips. Like, oh yeah. Like Steve and I used to go out and like Matt and Dan would go out all day long. Cook out in the ice. Like I left the Boone's Farm part out, but like,
Snow blindness.
Yeah, just stay
out. She's going to hear that part now.
And she's like, she was very like, that'd be fun. I'm like, and I was the kind of like, just what you said, I was thinking like, yeah. And those are good times, man. Those are good friends. Like just like all day long on that lake.
You somehow don't recognize it when it's happening.
No.
Those fun ass times, man.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to crossbows. why, like crossbows are super controversial all of a sudden, man.
I'm going to be the guy up here that's a proponent of crossbows.
You like them.
I'm going out. So with my daughter and like with the, there's a youth hunt that takes place earlier in the season. And on public land, you can't use a rifle. This is all correct, right? I'm saying this correct.
Well, where?
And so it'd be northern, like Grand Traverse, like Traverse County. Like you can't use a youth can't use a rifle on public land during that early season hunt.
Mm. Never been up there for that. Yeah. So.
I'll buy that. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Does not sound right.
So it was time for me to get a new bow. And she was like eight-ish. And so I was starting to take her hunting. And so I was kind of figuring like, I could invest in a new bow for me.
Yep.
Or I could buy this like crossbow that she and I can both use. It's like universal. And she was into hunting, but she was still nervous about like gunshots. This is kind of like a gateway drug into that, I guess, like with this crossbow.
I'm with you.
And she loved it. And, like, I kind of bought it as, like, for her, but now I use it. It's great. Like, I love it. And, you know, there's always talks about, like, you take these, like, far shots, and it's you know, it may just be how I view it, not how I hunt, but I haven't taken a shot with that thing that I would not have taken with a bow. Like, I don't, like, you know, it's you shoot it, you can see that bolt still moving, so it's not like it's rifle, you know, quality of, like, taking an 80-yard shot. You know, if you shoot a bow, you got those deer that jump the string or whatever and, like, you know, move quickly. So you always got that in mind. So any, like, far shot, like, I always have that in mind. So I just make sure it's, like, a normal bow shot and take it with that crossbow.
And you're having success.
Yeah. Yeah.
You ever shot one, Mark?
I have shot crossbows, never at an animal. But my dad used a crossbow. Grandpa used one back in the day. I don't have a problem with them. I understand why some people see there being ethical questions around long shots or why some people don't like the idea of a bunch of people just grabbing a crossbow and heading out during their cherished archery season. But who's drawing these lines of what's okay, what's not? You could have a traditional archer say, well, you shouldn't be taking your crossbow.
But I think it's also like you put a lot of stock then in just like hunting is so much more than like that piece of equipment that you use, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so you put all this like stock in like hunting is just like if you're using a bow or a crossbow that makes or breaks whether or not you're like an ethical hunter or like enjoying the hunt. When you just talk about like, you know, like the numbers of bow hunters are declining. Like that's probably not good for hunting.
And that's yes, sir. I was going to say the biggest reason why I'm okay with crossbows is simply because of that trend. Anything that's going to help people stick around in the hunting participating population longer, I'm going to be okay with. And that's something that, A, is easier for new hunters to pick up. So if we want to make it easier for new folks to get into deer hunting and try archery hunting, it's a whole heck of a lot easier for someone who maybe is interested in eating local food. Some guy who's 25 and is intrigued by the food aspect of it, it's going to be really hard to get that person right out the gate shooting a vertical bow, but give him a crossbow, you got a chance.
For kids, like I bought it for my daughter, and I think that's a good like kind of entry level like piece of equipment for you know if she pursues it more, then we will buy it, a decent bow. But like this is kind of like a way to get her to stay out in the woods with me, yeah, and like kind of be engaged in her own, and she can use it. So yeah, I think I didn't know how I felt about it when it first came on the scene, and then I, thought about it and bought this, and I'm happy with it. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, like I'd advocate, like if there's someone who got into hunting, picked up a crossbow, and that's what they started with, and they liked it, I would tell that person just from my own personal experiences, if you like that, you would really love trying a compound.
Yeah, I agree.
Like it's another level. It's a different experience. It requires a totally different level of time and energy and expertise, but it makes that experience a little bit different, a little bit more intimate in some way.
What if instead they say, this was great, but now have you seen these things that shoot the bolts out of what looks like a rifle?
Right.
What are they called?
Rifles?
Bolt guns?
Oh. Arrows? Yeah.
What if they say, you know what? This thing just shoots an arrow too.
Right.
Is that regarded as a gun or a bow?
We haven't decided yet.
Oh, no one's decided yet.
Can I use this during archery season?
I understand. Like, there's got to be a line drawn somewhere. And I agree that's a tough question to answer. And what's interesting is that, for whatever reason, when I look at that, my gut's like, oh, no, that should not be used. But then when you start thinking about, well, why, where's the... Maybe there's some mechanical thing within that then we can point to. So if it has this mechanism that propels the bolt or the arrow, then it can qualify as archery. But if it's compressed gas or something like that, I don't know.
Our dad was involved because he started bow hunting very early. And he was involved with groups that were early on petitioning states to create archery seasons, which at the time was very controversial. For many of the same reasons that people point to controversies around crossbows. People didn't want to have archery seasons because it was going to destroy deer hunting, on and on. But then, so he was involved in that in the 50s, and then was vehemently opposed to crossbows for the same set of reasons that he battled against, to try to bring in archery seasons. I don't know. I've never shot one. So I don't really have, this is just something I'm trying to look at and figure out. I had a guy write in, he's like, yeah, efficacy rates don't really go up with crossbows, but it's only because inexperienced hunters use them. He said, if the real hard hitters were using them, it'd be like game over from his perspective. Like the real lifelong hard hitters switch to that. It'd be like, they'd be exceptionally deadly. So I don't know. The instincts, Matt?
I don't know. I don't have an ethical position on it. My own state where I hunt, and I'm very selfish about, like, I like there to be as few people in my areas as possible.
He's not in the R3.
I would very completely selfishly hope they don't have crossbows.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it would turn into more people being in the areas
Do you think more people, like, do you think people that didn't hunt all of a sudden started hunting because crossbows came on the scene?
Absolutely.
You think so?
Or rifle hunters. What comes to mind to me is that a rifle hunter would be like, oh, now I can hunt
bugling
bulls with this thing.
And I think the whole question comes down to which way do you look at things? Do you look at that from the perspective of do you want more hunters or do you want fewer hunters? Do you want fewer hunters because it's going to lead to a better experience for you personally? Then you probably don't want crossbows. If you are less concerned about your specific way of experiencing the wild and what your hunt's going to be like, and you are thinking more about what are things going to be like 20 years from now when my son's hunting, then that person, I think, supports crossbows.
I'm on board until Matt loses opportunity. Once Matt starts losing opportunities, I say no more.
Okay, I'm ready to move on. I want to talk about emotional support dogs.
It's a good pivot.
Matt, how many dogs do you own?
Currently 5.
Do you have any of them registered as an emotional support dog?
Oh, even registered as one? No.
Like, do you have an emotional support dog?
No. No.
So how, like, we haven't really talked about this. You have one.
I have an emotional support course.
Can you break down for me? Are you at liberty to talk about it?
Sure.
Okay.
As long as the airlines, some representatives aren't.
I'd like to interject.
Can you explain? I want you to talk. I don't want to get yourself in trouble. From the perspective of someone with an emotional support dog.
Yeah, well, I.
Because how is it? Okay, go ahead.
No, finish your question.
Okay. Is it just that you don't want to be inconvenienced, so therefore you have an emotional support dog? Or do, like, to speak for your community, is it that you guys are like, oh, you mean I could do this and then just bring my dog everywhere? Is it that, or is it I emotionally?
Right. Well, I guess it's like, I enjoy being with my dog. So, like, I like my dog to be with me. And I just so happen to, like, I have struggled with depression my whole life. So I'm on antidepressants, which makes me eligible. So
to get the dog.
To have Shifty be an emotional support dog.
Is it more emotional for you without the dog?
So, it's really, the only reason I registered is I saved a few hundred bucks on airline tickets. But it's totally legit.
Right.
And, no, it is legit. I didn't know
and because she's an emotional support dog, I'm allowed to, like, have her on a leash next to me on the plane. Outside of a kennel, but I want people to think I'm paying to take her. So I put her in a kennel.
Oh.
So they don't think I'm, they don't know I'm crazy.
I want to put the comparison to this because I know people who've done this. Getting an emotional support dog permit is like getting a medical marijuana slip from your doctor. It's the same, if you say, I got a headache, okay, here, you can buy marijuana.
My doctor wanted a few days to think about it.
Same doctor.
So you don't use them for, because like with bird dogs, it'd be great, right?
Oh, I could fly to Alaska with one and go hunt ptarmigan if I could tell him I was, you know, I needed a dog for emotional support. That'd be great, but.
You just haven't done it.
I never even thought about it, but I know people who've done it. I know people who've done it with a full-size dog, and they were afraid they were going to get caught because, like you said, you don't want to say too much because part of it's for convenience. You know, you love that dog. You don't want to leave it at
home.
You're
putting words in my mouth.
I know.
Can emotional support dogs be any size, or do they have to be
any size?
Any breed, doesn't matter.
Could be a Mastiff or Corgi. Doesn't matter.
If, change of gears a little bit, if you... This is something I think I get nostalgic in Michigan. What's the thing from growing up that when you tell someone about it now,
oh boy,
what part of like some belief system or thing that was typical or that happened or extraordinary or whatever, that when you tell someone that happened to you when you were young, it sounds the most fucked up?
Can I lead off with that?
Like from a hunting perspective or just in general?
Just whatever you want. Okay. It could be. Go ahead. You have a clarifying question?
You sent us a couple ideas that we'd be talking about, and I said, Steve must have put me up to this one.
You have one?
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Well, I did put you up to it. I sent the idea to you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, but I thought you threw that one in because you know some history about me.
Oh, no, because I have things I can't tell.
Oh, okay.
I have... No, there's some things that... There's some practices that I was familiar with. I'm talking about, like, in the sporting life.
Right.
That... Now I just have to, I would talk about them with you downstairs,
right,
say.
Right,
but not up here.
No, this is just growing. This is just like growing up stuff. Things that you can't believe. And people nowadays.
Yeah, I'll do mine to give them time.
Okay.
About. Okay.
Because I got mine ready.
I told my wife this story, and I told my kids this story, and they look at me like they can't picture what I'm talking about. My dad used to have a friend who would come over. He was a drunkard. Named Mr. Higgins. And I remember Mr. Higgins coming over our house one time on his snowmobile in his snowsuit, but didn't have clothes on under his snowsuit. And do you remember this?
Yeah.
And he took one of our pet hamsters and put it in his snowsuit.
Wasn't a gerbil.
Yes. No, it was a hamster. Okay. Put it, I think it was a hamster, not a gerbil.
I think gerbils came into fashion.
I think it was a hamster. Yeah.
And put it in his snowsuit and let it run around while saying, "I love that little critter." it burned into my mind. Just Mr. Higgins, how drunk he'd be, how he'd come over on a snowmobile. And it just is like, and I probably even messed parts of it up. But when I tell people, I don't know why, but it's just like one of the stories that's in my repertoire. And it's gotten to be that people used to laugh, and now I tell people, they look at me like, "You can't be telling me this." Now, if he were to try to do that, he would burn up in flames or something on the way over. Like, right. Guys don't show up dressed that way, drunk on snowmobiles anymore.
Right.
It's just, for whatever reason.
Right.
Something in the air, the it's times.
Not, it's not accepted.
It's just...
So I'm going to take liberty because you know the story. Matt probably does. And me being the old guy here, I mean, the one thing is like...
I know what you're going to do.
You know where I'm going.
This is the greatest thing in the world.
It's not. It wasn't when you were growing up. But I want to preface it with, when I was a kid, I'm 61 years old. We literally got out of the house in the morning and left. And we lived in the city of Chicago, in the city. And we
just
came
all
back
black and white.
I mean, so what I'm getting at is like our parents didn't really, I'm not saying they didn't care. They just didn't worry like parents worry now. They didn't helicopter. And on that same thread, there was a policy at the Chicago Public Schools that I was oblivious to in eighth grade. In Chicago, you went first to eighth grade.
You
didn't
have you guys a skip second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. Start from an eighth.
That's what happened.
Now I know.
You know where I'm going. Yeah. All right. So, like, you get junior high here in Michigan.
I don't understand what just happened between you two.
Well, he knows.
I know what the story is.
Oh,
now.
I thought you knew about skipping from first to eighth.
And so I graduate eighth grade. Like, we didn't have a middle school thing. So you go from this little school with one little gymnasium.
I'm with you now.
So
this takes putting a hamster in your trousers and kicking it up.
There's no junior high. So you come from eighth grade, and all of a sudden you're going to go now with all these people older than you, and all your friends from eighth grade.
Yeah, it's like dudes with 5 o'clock shadows and stuff.
Oh yeah,
you're in eighth grade.
The guy that could buy you beer, in sophomore year. And come to find out, and this is, you can Google this. It is a policy. Was a policy until 1976. I graduated in 75. That boys swam naked in swim class. Now,
it's so bizarre.
I'm not trying to steal the thunder because no one's got one.
Oh, no, listen, man. The thunder is, you have the thunder. Yeah.
You're Thor in this one.
Matt was there. We were all up at the fish shack in Alaska, and I'm telling the story. You guys are rolling. And Doug's not believing me. And Danny Kidd's the only one that had a signal on his phone. And Danny goes, "Yeah, look here. Boys in Chicago swam naked from 1938 to 1975. And I'll end it on that, but...
What were they getting at?
Nobody knows. You can look it up and they say, the the swimsuits, if they weren't well kept and they were just dirty, I'm like, it didn't make any sense. I could go into too many swimming stories, but I just want you to picture. I don't think you're going sour here.
Just did. It's like
Pink Floyd's The Wall, man. It's like they're like, it makes no sense.
No, so, it's just, they're like, I want to make sure to cause as much psychological damage to the children as possible.
Right. And the point I was getting before was our parents didn't go to school. We didn't even have parent-teacher conferences unless you were, the kid that was in the hallway all week. And so if you come home, you say, we swam naked. Your mom would go like, you're going outside, be back by dinner. It didn't seem to bother anybody that I was also born October 30th. So I was like way behind the maturity scale.
You were 11 months behind everybody else.
I just kept looking in the locker for swimsuits and watching everybody walking. I'm like, looks like my dad. It's gotta be one here somewhere. I felt like I had less on than if you know what I'm saying. So it's
like you got naked and then took more stuff off.
I was more naked. And I to this day I can't swim a lick. I go up in the boat with you, I got the one life preserver that if it gets wet it goes. Anyway, so
I'm yeah, really.
I don't know. Maybe I ate up too much time on that. No. I'm sorry.
It's weird because, like, at that same time, I thought everybody was running around in those Rodney Dangerfield swimsuits, like, from back to school. Like the suit.
That was a little before me. But... yeah.
Oh, anything, Matt?
I got nothing after
you
that.
You tapped out?
Yeah, I'm good.
Sorry.
Mark, any practices that...
When I was a kid, I listened to Billy Joel.
there's some things that are so embarrassing, Mark.
Keep it to yourself.
Parents just wouldn't let that happen anymore.
Was it supposed to have a Michigan twist or no?
I know.
From our childhood.
Oh, yeah, because he violated the Michigan rule. No, just go ahead.
When you tell the story now, people kind of look at you like, is that for real?
Yeah, like, it feels like you're dating something. Like, another one I'll tell.
Well, I think I got something for you. It's like when I tell all you guys about Latvian summer camp and what went on there, you guys all look at me like,
yeah,
really?
What? I can go on and on about the activities that went on there, but it's just like every other summer camp, except it was Latvian summer camp.
Was it like Ronnie's swimming experience?
No, nothing like that.
Like, another version of what I'm saying would be that I remember one time my dad rounding a corner and my brother, we were little kids. The door swung open and he shot out onto the curb. So there's like a couple things where no safety belts, no child restraint seats, and he's riding shotgun. So that's just different now. Like now it's hard to picture a kid squirting out of a fast cornering car.
Yep.
No,
nothing.
You go.
No. I don't know if I have anything like that from my.
Yeah, I kind of misread the question.
Oh, what did you think it meant?
I thought you were talking about like really inhumane things we did as kids.
Oh yeah, that's what I was saying.
And then I thought, well, downstairs. It must be okay to talk about that. But now that I realize that's not what you're asking,
I'm pretty sure
it wouldn't be okay to talk about.
Although it does indicate how things were different.
Are you guys familiar with, Mark, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. If you shoot a high fence deer, is it true, like that deer is non-admissible into Pope and Young and Boone and Crockett?
Correct.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So we got a number
of
questions.
There are separate record books for that kind of thing.
What's that?
There are people keep those records, but not the Fairchase, Boone and Crockett, or Pope and Young books.
Like SDI will accept it, right?
Yeah. Pretty sure SDI and some other thing.
So Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young will not accept like a deer from a confined area in the record books. But we got a couple emails from guys asking an interesting question where the fish world doesn't have an equivalent. So some dude, like, I want to get my story straight here. Some guy in Tennessee makes a pond, has a private pond, and basically builds a crappie in the pond that beats the state record beats the state record by a pound.
That guy should be ashamed of himself, man.
And then
that's like, that's so ridiculous. But
IFGA accepts the fish.
But isn't the whole idea of having a trophy that you like accomplished something?
Well, and this other guy wrote, and Mark might even know about this. I don't know. I don't want to put it on you. But there's a guy in Texas who's managing a pond, and his whole deal is just to grow the next world record bass. And he says that this feller was actually influential in the creation of food plots to grow large whitetails. I don't know if that's true or not. It was last May that the guy in Tennessee raised himself up in a little pond a new world record crappie.
So it's more about, now it's like, it's not about your angling skill. It's like how good you are at fish husbandry.
It's egg.
Yeah.
Yes, but this is where it gets like a rich subject because what people's happened. Like there's the argument that whitetail hunting has become animal husbandry. It's become like big time whitetail hunting has become more akin to animal husbandry than hunting.
Yeah.
Which there's sides to it, but this idea that that's infiltrating or permeating the fish world, and should an organization that tallies records, like the IFGA is very strict. Like if you hook a fish and then hand the rod to me and I land it, that fish is ineligible.
Right.
Okay. You can't gaff it, all kinds of stuff, but you can basically make a frankenfish.
Yeah. And that's
as long as I don't hand the rod to you.
Right. Right.
It's the record.
It's like, what is the goal? I thought it seems like the goal should be like that if you get a high score in one of these things, that's like emblematic of some kind of an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And so I've always argued that there should be one that's like for the score you get when you shoot something where everybody else can go. And that would be like the one that most people would aspire to have the top score at.
Yeah, like you've proposed the idea, and I've talked about it. You've proposed the hunt purity score.
Hunt purity index is a different thing.
The hunt purity index is different.
Yeah, that's a different animal. But this is about like if we're gonna have some number that quantifies a hunting achievement. There should be one that's designated for fishing game that was harvested where anybody can go.
Yeah.
Do they have to catch this, like, so this fish he's raised, do you actually have to catch it? Like on a hook and line to qualify?
Yeah. You got to then catch it.
Of a pond you have right there.
Yeah, you can't net it up. Yeah. You got to catch it by certain criteria.
Well, that makes it perfect then.
Well, is there any difference in that and making your property into food plots and all that other stuff?
No, I don't know. I'm throwing.
So I like to fish out of the pond in the backyard.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think the bigger issue. Go ahead. I think the bigger issue is even the idea of applying or saying that the score of an animal's antlers is indicative of some kind of skill that you as a hunter has at all. I think that's where our issue is in general. That we're looking at this number.
Yeah,
somehow.
But what else is it? If it's not that.
Well, I would say let's get rid of it altogether.
I'd say it's like always that. Like, why else would you have a scoring system unless it's like a surrogate for how long your pecker
is? That's not why they came up with scoring systems.
Right. When the Boone and Crockett Club was started, they were trying to improve the records available to understand these species back in the 1890s.
It's come a long way.
It's come a long way, but no, it's important to understand that it was a way. You could look at long-term trends of what the landscape was capable of producing. So, whatever it became, there was a way to, it was like at a time, this sort of way to tabulate and mark what species were doing.
Right.
How
but
long
now
did things
it's
live?
Like when somebody tells you the inches of their deer, they're not boasting about what productive habitat they hunt.
No.
I think that score can be valuable as like an indication of like the rarity of an animal. Like I killed a deer that scored higher than a deer I've ever killed a higher scoring deer than I ever have before this past year. Does that mean I'm some kind of great hunter because of it? No. The only thing I look at that as proof of anything is just simply I was fortunate enough to kill a very rare deer. And so in my own mind, that's kind of special just because of how rare that animal is out there. But no way do I assign any kind of like higher skill level to myself because I killed an X deer and so killed a so many less inches deer.
But you're drifting, but that's drifting from what we're talking about when we're talking about like the thing with raising a fish up in a pond is it's in a completely controlled environment.
Right.
So it's not even, it's not like you're taking on the idea that the, should there be a, like maybe you're arguing the idea, should there be, is there validity to having a system by which we score things? And with fish, it's just weight, you know? But this is sort of like, if you have like our normal notion of like someone catches a fish, there's a normal sense of he got it.
Oh, definitely.
And whereas others could not.
I have a question because I, you know, I'm not the big game hunter in the room. So when
we're talking about fish.
Okay, but I got to go to Boone and Crockett.
Okay.
So if Boone and Crockett or Pope and Young was started to see what, how deer were healthier, bigger antlers, are we saying in the beginning of Boone and Crockett there was nobody's name next to who shot it?
No, they did.
Well, then I go back with Matt's idea.
Well, there's all kinds of information
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, but okay. It wouldn't be important to have the hunter's name on it.
Let's say you knew that some county in Michigan, once upon a time, some county in Michigan used to every year, I'm just going to pull this like a number that's not achieved, but let's say some county in Michigan every year would kill 20 Boone and Crockett bucks every year.
Yep.
But then you look, and it's been a decade since one has been produced in that county. Do you regard that as helpful or not helpful information?
If I was a big game hunter, I guess I'd find that as helpful if I was looking for bigger antlers.
If you were a guy that wanted a deer with a big score, yeah, it'd be very helpful.
Very helpful.
I think, but I also think it's telling of something else. The fact that some people abuse it or fetishize it, I don't think then means that the whole idea of scoring something is invaluable or invalidated because some guy is a prick about it.
So do you think this guy will go back next year, catch that crappie again, and have the first and second place?
Speaking of fish.
Shit.
What health advisories on fish? Like, you eat a lot of fish.
Yeah.
You eat a fair bit of fish. You eat much fish, Mark?
Some, but not as much as you guys.
You pay much attention to health advisories?
No. I don't.
You really don't?
I really don't.
It's trick, like, I don't, but I'd rather I didn't know about them.
That's, yeah.
It'd be more
when
fun
you asked
if someone
this question earlier,
told
I got nervous. I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be thinking about
I'll
that.
I'll say that, like, I'm willing to trust, I mean, I live as though I trust the science emphatically. Like, if there's a reservoir by my house that I fish, and it says don't eat fish out of here more than 3 times a month.
And that's I'll a hell of like, a lot of fish, though.
I'll be like, okay, I will, if as long as I don't eat 4 times, then I am 100% safe, you know? It's weird. There's so much weird stuff about food. I hear people talk about that all the time, that pond. But these are people, like friends of mine, where I live, that like, oh no, there's that health. But these are people that eat grilled meat and processed meat, like brats and stuff, 4 or 5 times a week. There's so much evidence that grilled meat causes cancer.
Yeah.
It's like undeniable, but they'll do that, you know? So it's like.
That's one of the things that frustrates me about it is when I was living in Seattle, we had a great yellow perch fishery. No one would touch it.
because everyone knows about this thing that you weren't supposed to eat more than like some number a month. But I'm like, weren't you just shit-faced the other night? It's like, ask your doctor, how often should I get so drunk that I can't remember where I was? I can't even.
Not more than four times per week.
He's like, I'm not eating fish. No way I'd eat fish out of that thing.
I don't pay attention to advisories because this box says the Surgeon General says quit smoking now because it greatly reduces your risk of health.
And that's not slowing you down?
Not a bit. I'm good.
Talk about what Parker Hall's perspective on it.
His perspective is if he was to be so lucky and to be such a good fisherman for the rest of his days to catch so many fish that he would then poison himself and his family from feeding them so many of these fish, then he and his family will die happy because he was such a good fisherman.
You'll know he was a winner.
Yeah. He had a lot of good days spent.
Okay, Mark, I hit you with another deer one.
Yeah.
Being in deer hunting country and all. A guy wrote in wondering this. You know how there's this commonly held perception, probably true, seemingly true, that when you pressure deer, they become nocturnal. They become increasingly nocturnal with pressure. You don't like that?
No, I mean, to a degree, yes. It's increased widely, pressure.
Is it a commonly held perception?
Yeah,
commonly
I would say it changes deer.
Everyone here would agree that there's like a thing like, you know, deer under more and more pressure do more and more, move less during daylight. This guy has a great idea that I think will, I'm going to tell you, Mark, I'm going to give you a hot tip. This is going to change the whitetail world.
All right.
Why not go out on your property and raise holy hell at night all the time?
I like it.
And drive them diurnal.
It's a very interesting idea.
It's a great idea. Those deer are like, bro, I don't do shit at night. Did you see the people out here? I wait till that sun is high in the sky. And then I go out to that field and catch a bite.
Changing lives.
What's that?
You're changing lives right there. That's an interesting idea.
And another dude about whitetails wrote in wondering if you could, by the app, through the liberal application of doe and heat, lure, urine, if you could make the rut come earlier by all the mimicry and making deer think they were missing out.
No.
You're not buying
that. Oh, I think you could. Well, I'll say this. I don't know if you could or not, but I think that you could potentially instigate a rut because I think bucks can breed does anytime.
No. Can they?
I think so. That they're always the only reason they're...
I think
they're,
so, too.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is trying to get a doe. Way. Trying to get a doe that. To stand.
Yeah, well, people are that way. It doesn't mean that perch are.
Well, yeah, but female, like human females are ready all the time, too, but...
Yeah.
But cattle...
Not all the time.
Cows aren't.
No, that's a big thing. That's where they think... That's one of the things they think drove human monogamy was the, like, a thing that drove human monogamy that is that there's no, like, one, a human female is receptive. There's no outward manifestation. It's not like a baboon or something where there's an outward manifestation. And it could happen at any point in time. It could happen throughout the year.
Throughout the year.
So you didn't have, like, humans to guard your reproductive partner. You couldn't be like a deer and be like, I'm out for 11 months, but I'll be back when the action happens. You had to like be, and it sort of drove, you know, like humans are kind of monogamous, and that's a thing that helped drive it.
Never heard that.
Monogamy? But where were we in this? Oh.
Well, the whitetail.
Are you challenging that a buck can... He's ready to go whenever.
I know that, right, the rut is triggered by changing levels of daylight. which then impacts rising levels in testosterone in a buck and estrogen in a doe. And so when the doe reaches that certain level, which is triggered only by the change in daylight, that then will bring her into heat, which then will allow her, or leads to her standing and a buck being able to mate her. Would a buck be able to do that otherwise if you could somehow... Now, I think there have been studies that where they've put deer in controlled environments where they can change, where they can control photo period, and then have been able to change the timing of breeding within a closed facility on, like, lab deer, basically. So if you could do that to a doe, but then have a buck just maintain regular status quo, would he breed her if she was standing in April because she thought it was the time to go? Maybe. But I don't think that psyching him out with a bunch of snort wheezes and buck grunts is going to do it.
I'm going to throw something out there, and I don't expect anyone to really notice, but I know that a listener will know and email in. If you were to capture a deer here, a buck, and then transport that buck to the southern hemisphere, how long would it take until he was shedding his antlers 6 months later? Now that is a question.
Right.
I got
follow-up for you.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Yanni.
Have any of you guys ever wished that instead of being year-round, like we have it, that you could switch like roles with, say, a bull elk or the elk species?
Have like a human rut.
And just roll in, like, you know, early to mid-September and hang out for about 30 days, fight and roll around in mud and piss, get things done, and then leave.
What are you going to do for the other 11 months of the year?
I'm just asking.
Don't make it during deer season. Don't make
it'd be like a wedding reception all the time, man. It's such an interesting thought that we had never as a species got into the way we're in. It's just like this time of year when all of a sudden, like, everyone's going to breed now. It's highly competitive. There's no sense of allegiances. That's dudes are just, like, beating each other to death.
That's not going to work.
They bring out the condiment rack.
No, those things have names. It's like 5, beta, alpha, and stuff like that, right? Okay, one last one, and then we're going to play Seeing Through the Bullshit. Reincarnated. Did I preview this one with you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gave
Reincarnated.
Someone I didn't read the whole email, so I don't think I got that far.
You saw
down.
This email come in?
Yeah. But I didn't read the whole thing, so I didn't. I'm not.
No, but did you see the dude that emailed us about this?
No.
Oh. You could be reincarnated as an animal. What do you go with?
Oh.
That's too easy.
Yeah, you did. That was on a platter. Thank you.
The eagle.
Mine is. I want to be a big old bull elk, man.
Really?
Wanna,
is everybody trying to shoot at
I
you?
I want
to
rip one. Big old bugle. I want to urinate down my leg. I want to freaking destroy some trees and shit.
You don't care how bad
and
you smell.
I want to juke some dude, like make him follow me down the mountain for 3 miles and then just vanish.
But you didn't speak up like, on that
I
last
raise
question.
Hell.
That last question, you just had the
climb
opportunity.
Climb a mountain and not even feel it.
Yeah. It'd be nice. Ripping them bugles would be cool as shit, man.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, do your way far off elk bugle. Oh, everybody get ready.
This is a
bugle way far off. Where you're like,
I
did I just
it.
Hear
that
one?
Was so far off, you barely heard it.
Rip another one. I want the kind where you're like, you can't even tell if you heard it.
That's when he barks at you.
So you come back as the Lavine Eagle. You come back as the bull elk ripping up trees and bugling. I'd roll flying squirrel, man. Because have you ever won? Because I want, like, squirrels are cool, but I want people shooting at me. And have you ever felt the soft tummy on a flying squirrel?
Yes.
It is
unbelievable. It is the most.
Like velvet.
The most unbelievable.
So you picture yourself every night kicking back with a cold beer.
Yes. And just like when you're, you know, when you're like, when you're laying in bed and you're like, you move your leg to get to a fresh zone or whatever.
Yeah.
Just the feeling of myself as a flying squirrel. Yeah.
And you get a little bit of that eagle feeling every now and then.
I would just wake up and be like, geez, do I feel good. Like, I mean, I feel good. Yeah.
Loon. Yeah, you can fly, you can fish. People like you.
Yeah. No one shoots at you.
No one shoots at you.
Yeah. Loon. You get to make that cool noise out on the lake.
Fly out at night, just over the head. You hear him, like, making that loon sound. Yeah. Loon.
Our dad called muck loon shit. It was, like, bad muck. Yeah. Deep muck was that.
That's a good animal.
That's all right. They probably live long.
Yeah.
What are you going to roll with, Mark?
I went a very different direction than you guys. I was thinking, like, first, like a wolf. Like, I like to hunt. But then I realized, I'm not really a pack animal. I'm much more kind of like a curmudgeon that would want to sit in a tree by myself and wait and watch.
Old mountain lion.
Mountain lion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with the game bird thing because that's everything I do. And
so you're going to live about a year and a half.
it's going to be a good year. And, you know.
It's like, while hitting some brush.
Like, there's like, everyone knows, like, technically, in some cases, geese mate for life.
Yep.
And I was telling you earlier today how a bobwhite quail will, she'll lay her eggs, get together with the male that's fertilized her or, you know, bred with her, leaves him to watch the eggs, and she goes off like my first wife and does it again. But the ringneck pheasant is, I want to be gaudy. I want to have a big rooster crow, and I don't want to be monogamous in my next life. I want to have all the ladies and have no responsibility. And if you're an elk, you got to take care of all them women at the same time. No, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, you just want to go one.
I just want to run around and crow again. Rooster.
All right, Giannis. Pull up who's the person my mom picked. You got your piece of paper?
Yeah, should we do that first?
Well, and then while that person, because my mom picked the underdog, it's going to be an hour till they get down here.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
It's going to be a while, isn't it?
And then we'll explain how it works.
All right, so the person that is sitting in this seat, if you would like to, please come on down to the stage and you're going to play Seeing Through the Bullshit presented by Vortex with us. It is the balcony right center. Okay, so does everybody know which section that is? If you're up there, it should say on your ticket. Okay, you guys know. You are in balcony right center, and the seat is M3.
Okay, so here's how. So we wanted to do the game, and our buddies at Vortex helped us out by creating a gift that we can give out. Do I have? Oh, they're right here.
Yep.
So you get these here, brand spiggity new 10x42 Fury binoculars.
Ow!
Souped up high-end binoculars with they got a built-in laser rangefinder. So usually you have your binoculars and I'll carry a rangefinder, but he's got the rangefinder's in there. So you hit the button and it rangefinds stuff. We were messing around and we were zapping. We were able to rangefind deer at over 1,000 yards. We were messing around with these. So you get these for seeing through the bullshit and playing the game. Now, the game is this. We're going to tell you We're going to tell you a thing that's true, but you're going to have to pick it out from two things that are not true. Where's the person?
I think he's rappelling.
Oh, you coming down?
Come on. Right. Up.
We should have a seat for him.
How's it get up?
Can you hop up?
Hop on up. Are you fired up, or do you wish you weren't doing it?
You're fired up.
What's your name?
Rick.
Rick. Nice to meet you. Right. Hey, can we have a... You pass me that chair. Thank you. Where should we put Rick?
Right there. Anywhere.
Let me put you in the middle, Rick.
So, Rick, you're going to hear a thing that's true and two things that are not true. And your job is to suss out the true one. You want to go first?
You want to give him the true one first?
Yeah, let's hit him with the true one.
like that Princess Bride thing. I guess I was reading about this, and it was published last year in the Journal of Wildlife Management. I guess one of the age-old questions in whitetail management is how they avoid inbreeding. And it seems like particularly prescient, like with habitat fragmentation and that deer are getting confined to smaller areas and the populations, you got these meta populations that aren't linked. So people have always wondered how they don't suffer inbreeding depression. So this group of social scientists and behavioral ecologists from Michigan State took some detailed observations on whitetail does, and it turns out that not only do they segregate from their first siblings and their male first siblings and first and second cousins, like they become spatially segregated from them during the rut, but they become highly aggressive towards them when they do encounter them. So I guess the male relatives are keen to mate, like, unlike humans, they don't mind kissing
their
sister. So you're
saying siblings, but also
first and second cousins. Yeah.
Like, did a doe can detect?
Yeah. Yep. There's a case study part of the paper where they talk about a few incidences where they've caught the does actually trying to nip off the testicles of.
Okay. It's Doug, right? Doug?
Rick.
Rick. The hell did I get Doug? I'm going to take you back to 1827. Okay? There are a couple of promoters around Niagara Falls. And they get this idea that how they can raise up some money. And they buy an old schooner, like a barge schooner. And they figure, you know what people would really pay a lot of money to see? Is if we filled it full of zoo animals and ran it over Niagara Falls to its destruction. And so they get some bears, they get geese, they get a buffalo, they put dogs and cats on it. And it doesn't really work because the bears jump out and swim to shore. Everything else goes over the falls. It's rumored that the first creature besides a fish to ever survive the fall over Niagara Falls was a goose. And it's estimating the number of people that came to see this happen is as difficult as Trump's inauguration. But it's estimated between 5 and 30,000 people came to watch this menagerie. Came to watch this menagerie of animals go over Niagara Falls to their death. Best estimates put it at 10,000 people gathered to watch this happen. But you haven't heard the last one. Yanni?
I'm going to read mine right out of the newspaper article that where I found it.
I read it on the Inquirer.
Last summer, Rick, a new Indiana state record largemouth bass was caught, eclipsing the previous record, which was a 14-pound, 6-ounce bass that was caught by Jennifer Schultz, which had stood for 20 years. On a neighborhood pond in Bloomington, Indiana, an 81-year-old grandma, Carol Lundberg, took her 7-year-old grandson, Jackson, fishing. She forgot the bait. Carol picks up a cigarette butt and puts it on the hook. I guess she thought it looked like a worm. She casts it out, passes the rod to her grandson, and he immediately drags up a toad. The fish is certified at 16 pounds, 8 ounces, and it becomes the new Indiana state record largemouth. Just last summer. What's that? Bull? Bull? That one's bullshit? And you think Steve's is the true story?
Yeah. Like, absolute certain. You got it. You're the first guy to ever win. Give that man his title.
Have you heard Steve's story before? You never heard it before?
You never heard that story before?
No.
What was it that gave it away?
It just seemed like something people would do back then. They weren't so tempted.
Yeah. Good job, man.
Good work, man.
Thank you for coming up. Everybody else?
Hold on. What?
We forgot something?
Yeah, you're forgetting something very important. There's a giant merch table out back
there.
You got to work
with my system, man. Thank you very much. With that, love all you guys. Have
Thank
a great
you very
night.
Much.